week, we'll bring you authors, professors, researchers, and activists who are committed to bringing you the latest information which you can use to ensure maximum wellness for yourself, your cells, and your family. Tune into PRN.FM every Tuesday, 10 to 11 Eastern Standard Time, or listen to the archive at 1-701-719-0884. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.
This is PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.
We bit that apple and the garden was lost. And so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
oh yeah, started to burn too many things we found. That's the wonderful Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, the Solartopia song, back for another hour here in the Green Power Wellness Show at PRN. Thank you, crew in New York, and thank you to our wonderful guests. We have a huge, as Bernie would say, a huge issue to deal with this hour. There is a coup d'etat being attempted in Ohio, our Seminole swing state there. Not Seminole, by the way, that's Florida. It involves, of course, the two nuclear power plants ready to blow up on Lake Erie. And that's Perry and Davis Bessie, and the attempt of the Ohio legislature to bail them out. Before we jump into that, we have Kevin Camps. Kevin, are you with us?
I am here. Thank you.
Good. Wonderful. 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 Becca Pollard, are you with us?
Yep.
All right. And Michael Keegan?
Hello.
Hey, man, a full house. So, Michael, you're in Michigan. Becca, you're here in Columbus, Ohio, where I am.
Yep.
And, of course, Kevin, where are you? You travel around a lot. You're usually in D.C.,
yep,
right?
I'm in Kalamazoo, Michigan, as we speak.
Oh, no kidding. Unbelievable. All right. So we are going to get into the bailout, the attempted bailout, the wonderfully stalled, thank God, bailout of the two nukes up on Lake Erie, which are ready to blow in any minute. We're going to talk about Diablo Canyon, the reactors on the earthquake fault. We're going to talk about the Nuclear Regulatory decision to not even make a pretense of inspecting these reactors. And we're also going to talk about the amazing series, HBO series on Chernobyl, which will knock your socks off. Before we did that, though, I want to jump in and talk about Trump. As I'm sure, and I'll let you all chime in, although this is primarily a nuclear show, but, you know, what we have here now, and I think a turning point has been reached. You know, Trump in general, he was talking about Hillary Clinton to lock her up, but she was a political candidate. He's talked about this, he's talked about that. He said the neo-Nazis in Charlottesville that killed Heather Heyer and we're running around with swastikas, we're fine people. We don't have to go through the litany of Donald Trump here. I've just eaten, and I want to, you know, not barf on the phone. But I think a turning point has been reached here. I mean, this, you know, leave the country stuff, this is pure fascist. This is Hitler attempting to take power. You know, this is what Hitler did in 1933 and before, running around Germany, screaming and yelling about the Jews, talking to audiences that yelled back, full of hate. And in this case, he has singled out four specific human beings, all of whom are members of Congress. And, of course, Nancy Pelosi singled them out beforehand. But nonetheless, this is Donald Trump leading huge rallies, starting with one in North Carolina, chanting exactly the way the Nazis chanted in the 1930s. I don't think there's any way, shape, or form that you do not make that parallel and that you start talking about Trump in terms of Hitler. He is running very openly concentration camps along the border of Mexico, which are very close to becoming actual death camps. People are dying there. The pure cruelty is of a world-class level, let's put it that way. He has people, neo-Nazis, admirers of Hitler, running around, supporting him. And this is a very clear campaign to get himself a second term, which will be the final term, for American democracy and the final term for the planet Earth. I mean, this EPA of Trump's has just approved a pesticide that destroys bee populations. I mean, we're all following this devastating situation with the bees. We know how desperately important it is to preserve the bee population. And within the last couple of days, the Trump EPA has approved a pesticide that absolutely is the Zyklon B of the bee population. So, you know, this is serious stuff. Donald Trump has, to me, any line that might have preserved us, stopped us from comparing him to Hitler, I think is gone. And so I've written a piece about that. I've just sent it to Reader Supported News. We'll see if they use it. But that's my point of view. My wife's parents were in the Holocaust. And so that's my point of view. Any of the three of you want to jump in? I know you were called to talk about energy, but it would be remiss of us to not deal with this situation. Kevin, did you want to chime in?
Yeah, well, I just remember, Harvey, that you invited me to go to Cleveland in July of 16 during the Republican National Convention to be at the Shadow Conference during Trump's freak show, no offense to freak shows that took place there. And it was a very empowering experience to be, you know, sharing that scary time with progressives from all over the country. And nuclear power and radioactive waste and renewable energy were a part of the discussion. And, Sierra Club had just announced a 100% renewable energy vision for Cleveland, one of the first, or if not the first city in the country to take that on. And, you know, the warning signs were there big time in July of 2016, and here we are.
Here we are. And, there's been a hesitation in terms of language to not, and people don't like to hear Trump being compared to Hitler because it seems too radical, I suppose. But I don't see how you avoid, I mean, I'm a historian. And I have seen countless hours of documentaries about the rise of Hitler. And I don't see any reason to hold back. This is full-on Hitler stuff. His percentage of support in the country is very parallel to Hitler's. Hitler had between 30 and 45% when he finally took power. He never really had a majority of power. Of support when he took power. They had a parliamentary system. He became chancellor, and then, the old guy died. And then they had this mysterious fire at the Reichstag, and he tore up the Constitution, and the rest is history, as they say. Michael or Becca, do you want to chime in on this?
Yeah. I just wanted to point out, I think a lot of people are saying right now that Trump's racism is really un-American, and I think it's really important to acknowledge that we do have a very racist history in this country. and that the Nazis were actually inspired by some of the horrible atrocities that happened against the indigenous people of this land. So, you know, I think we really need to keep that in mind when we think about how all of this is coming full circle.
Absolutely. Hitler loved to read Westerns because he really liked how the United States dealt with the indigenous. You know, that was his, that was something that he really enjoyed, Hitler. And there are those who believe that the concentration camps in Germany were inspired by the Indian reservations. And, you know, looking at our sorry history with the indigenous, you know, there's every reason to believe that's true. Michael Keegan, you want to jump in on that?
Oh, well, a friend of mine said, you've got to watch Mussolini. You've got to get some footage of Mussolini and watch Mussolini. Trump absolutely apes Mussolini. I mean, just the mocking, the just the smugness. Anyway, I'm a social scientist, and I agree wholeheartedly that these are fascist times, and he is a fascist. And he pushes that hate button, and it's easy to hate. It's hard to understand. But in the meantime, he takes this country over the edge, and we are in environmental and economic, on the verge of environmental and economic collapse. And it's all in creating the other and somebody to blame for it. Well, this nation is being looted, and we've all been lulled to sleep by this charismatic leader. So I do agree he is a fascist, and I will back that up with my several years of social science training, speaking to what fascism is. Subverting the law of the land, working in tandem with corporations to subvert the law of the land, to skirt the laws. So he's got to go. And the sooner the better.
Okay, so then I'm going to jump in now. Thank you, all three of you. Again, we'll have another round after I say this. The point of the piece that I wrote today is that what's really empowering Trump is the corporate Democrats. And we had the same situation in Germany. They were called the Weimar Democrats. W-E-I-M-A-R. They're a bunch of wimps. They never stood up to him. They had no real program. They looked down on the working people. And they, you know, they anybody who really wanted to come out and strongly oppose Hitler, they basically said, well, he's just a passing phase. That was the line. It was used in Judgment at Nuremberg, as Burt Lancaster played a judge who was being tried for war crimes. And he basically said, which is part of the mindset in Germany, was the Weimar Democrats, the well-to-do and middle-class liberals, just said, okay, well, let's let Hitler get rid of the communists, and then we'll get rid of Hitler. And he did the former, but they never did the latter. Until, you know, a world war later. So, to me, you know, I was horrified by what Nancy Pelosi said about the squad, the four women of color in the Congress. And what was missed in the most of the discussion of these four women is that they're not only women and not only of color, but they're young. And the only way that we are going to get rid of Donald Trump is if the millennials get inspired and come out. You know, Hillary Clinton did everything in her power and very successfully discouraged the millennials from coming out to vote. I mean, they love Bernie. Bernie is your old radical professor. You know, he's the frumpy, grumpy, old new leftist who comes in and tells you all this stuff. And that's Bernie's role. But he, because he's so honest and so in your face, the millennials have loved him. And when Hillary shafted Bernie in 2016, she doomed her campaign because she basically told the millennials to go home. And here you have Nancy Pelosi, And I'm not an ageist. I can't afford to be. I'm 73. And she's telling me four women, they only represent four votes. I got to tell you something, Nancy Pelosi. These four women represent 86,500,000 votes. That's the millennial generation, and that's who they are. And without them, without some real substance and some real excitement from the Democratic Party, we will never beat Trump. That's my feeling. That's what I wrote today. It'll be published somewhere the next day or two. You want Becca or Michael, you guys want to jump in on that one before we get to nukes?
Well, it's Kevin. I would just say, you know, my heroes are the Abe Lincoln Brigade from the United States. And yes, they were communists. And yes, they were anarchists. And yes, they went to Spain with the clothes on their back. They didn't even have weapons. And they went to Spain and joined with the royalists, the loyalists, the Republicans to fight the fascists, to fight Franco. And, you know, the United States government under Roosevelt, unfortunately, just sat it out, and worse. You know, Texaco was fueling the fascists in Spain while Hitler and Mussolini bombed the people of Spain from the air at Guernica, you know. So there has to be some courage to take on the bully, to put it mildly. And we're in a predicament in this country, so people got to step up.
I agree with you, Hunter. And you know who else screwed the Lincoln Brigade was Stalin. I mean, it wasn't just FDR that let them twist in the wind. It was Stalin who they had thought was going to support them and just let them go. And
he was busy starving the Ukrainians at the time. So
yeah, he had a terrible history of doing that, Becca. You want to jump in on this generational thing?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think you make a lot of good points. I do want to just bring up the fact that one thing that I don't think gets talked about enough is voter suppression, and that's a huge problem in Ohio, as I know you're aware. And so that's something that I think really needs to be addressed, and something I wish the Democratic Party was talking about more is how to address that, not just to turn out voters, but to actually enable more people to be able to vote.
I agree 100%. And, you know, again, the Democrats don't do anything about it. I mean, when Bob Fitrakis and I were breaking the stories of the theft of the 2004 election, the Republicans couldn't have cared less. They didn't care that we were pointing out what they did. But the Democrats went crazy and denied the whole thing, and still have done very little to deal with election theft. Michael Keegan, you want to talk about this generational thing before we jump in on nukes here?
Hopefully.
I know you're a young guy.
I appreciate the squad of four, and yes, they do represent the new movement. And I'm hopeful that we'll get there. All of history is challenge and response, and we certainly have a challenge before us. But I hope we're able to rise and respond and boot his butt out. So I'm hopeful.
Yeah, well, you got to remember one thing about the election of 2020. This is the first time, as a historian, I can tell you, this is the first time that an incumbent candidate was either won or went to prison. And so, you know, what kills me is, one of the things is that Trump is a money launderer, and his whole financial well-being is based on having pulled himself out of bankruptcy and out of $4 billion in debt by laundering Russian money, and you know, this whole Mueller thing. Mueller never looked at money laundering. And, you know, of course, this Department of Justice won't. The Democrats could destroy Trump with a three-hour hearing. That's all it would take. An hour with Steve Bannon, because Bannon actually was the first one to warn that Trump's downfall, he's the first one to predict that Trump's downfall would be money laundering. And if I was running the Congress, I would just call him on the stand and say, okay, Steve, what did you mean when you said that Trump's downfall would be money laundering? And it would be interesting to see how Vanda would dance around that, but he's such an unpredictable character, you never know. And the other two people I would have, I've had them both on the show, David K. Johnston, who's been following Trump for 30 years, and Craig Unger. Their books are It's Even Worse Than You Think, and House of Trump, House of Putin. And they both have documented beyond any shadow of a doubt that Trump's whole financial shtick, whatever he's got, came from laundering Russian money when the Soviet Union fell, and then Putin took over all the oligarchs, who were basically mobsters, and that's all. That's it's not that Trump colluded. Colluded is a vast understatement. Trump is owned lock, stock, and barrel by Vladimir Putin. Okay, and then, you know, I'm waiting for, I'm holding my breath for the Democrats to actually deal with that. This, I think it's breathtaking how wimpy and just flat out uninspiring and, you know, get nothing done these Democrats are. All right, let's leave it at that because we've got a ton to cover here. And the biggest issue, of course, is nuclear power. And yet we had a shocking development. And Becca, we're going to turn to you. You're on, you're at the State House here in Columbus. All of us thought that this week the Ohio legislature was going to pass this grotesque criminal Trumpian bailout of the two nuclear reactors on Lake Erie and their criminal owner, First Energy. But somehow it didn't happen. Can you tell us what transpired here in Columbus? This is a huge deal.
Yeah, so HB 6 is a bailout bill that was introduced in April in the State House. And, you know, it started out as just a nuclear bailout, but then it actually got made worse. It turned into a bailout for two coal plants as well, one of which isn't even in Ohio. And it also has become an attack on our renewable energy and efficiency standards. So, you know, this bill is just a really horrible energy bill in a lot of ways that could really take Ohio backwards. It passed the House a while back, and just yesterday it passed in the Senate with some amendments. So now it's going back to the House. We expected the House to vote on it last night, but at the last minute, they announced that they weren't going to take a vote because they were missing some key people who presumably are yes votes. So the vote has been delayed until August 1st. So we've got a couple more weeks now to keep the pressure on our state reps and tell them to vote no.
Well, what exactly happened? I mean, did these people, it was four, am I right, it's four state reps who somehow turned up missing when the key time was to vote?
Yeah, my understanding is that one of them actually retired, but the other three just weren't present.
So this guy retired? Is it a woman or a guy?
I believe it's a man. I can't remember his name at the moment. I'll have to.
So between the time he voted in the House to approve this thing and last night when they had to reapprove the amended version from the Senate, he retired?
That's my understanding, yeah. but, you know, this is just a really unpopular bill, and I think they're just having a hard time getting the votes they need to get it through. You know, it's really a bill that only First Energy and its employees like.
It's mind-boggling. Do you want to give us some detail on how much? My understanding is, well, how much money are they talking about here? How much money do they want to soak the Ohio ratepayers to keep open these two engines of mass suicide?
Well, that number has changed a few times, and I don't have the current numbers right in front of me, but I think they would cap it at $1.50 a month is what I read. What they want to do is get rid of our renewable or get rid of our efficiency standards to pay for this nuclear and coal bailout. So what they want to do is, instead of funding things that make our air cleaner and create the jobs of the future, they want to charge Ohioans to keep us stuck in the past and keep polluting the earth and make this a less healthy place to live. It's important to note that the Kiger Creek coal plant, one of the coal plants that would get a bailout, is creating a tremendous amount of air pollution that's impacting the Cincinnati area. So, you know, there are some really bad impacts to Ohioans from paying for this, and these charges would be applied to people all over the state. It's not just people in the areas that are getting energy from these plants. So, you know, even if Cincinnatians aren't getting their energy from the coal plants, because Cincinnati is actually one of the cities that's made a commitment to 100% renewable energy by 2050, they would still have to pay to import that pollution to their community.
And my understanding is that those two coal plants are 50 years old, and
yes,
they were in the business of supplying energy to the uranium enrichment facility at Portsmouth Piketon, and that's why they need the bailout. Is that right? Because that enrichment facility is closed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know all the history of it, but yeah, that's what they were originally built for.
Okay, we're talking with Becca Pollard, by the way. I know you guys, so I forgot to introduce you to my audience. Becca Pollard is with the Sierra Club here in Columbus, and does really great work on clean energy. Michael Keegan, you're up in Monroe, Michigan, right there next to the Fermi plant, getting irradiated every day. I understand that every day as you go to work, you walk by the statue of George Armstrong Custer. So what can you tell us about what's really going on here with First Energy and this insane bailout?
Here's my dog in the hunt. I share Lake Erie. And both Davis Bessie and Perry sit on Lake Erie, and they are huge thermal polluters, a tremendous contribution to thermal pollution of the lake, which is helping to drive the algae blooms. I got a sad call last night from Sandy Bin with the waterkeepers, the Lake Erie waterkeepers, informed me that today the lake turned green. Just very saddening. And these nuke plants are contributing to that. All this vapor, these clouds, these marshmallows that they produce, these are greenhouse gases that are far worse than CO2. So about 10,000 gallons a minute is vaporized at Davis Bessie. Probably that and a half at Perry. So they're trapping greenhouse gases. They're discharging hot water into the lake, and they are killing Lake Erie. So that's my dog in the hunt. As such a scientist, I have some training in economics, and this is corporate welfare. This is nothing but a bailout to a very, you know, narrow interest group. And at the end of the day, all this money is going to go into the pocket of Exelon. We are bailing out shareholders of First Energy so they can get in a position where they can dish it off to Exelon to help those shareholders. This is not acceptable. This is going to be a millstone around the neck of Ohio for decades to come. And this should be a millstone around the neck of all the politicians who vote for this. This is clearly not the direction to go. The Ohio legislators have locked Ohio into a death spiral by being obstructionist in allowing renewables and alternatives to come on the grid. It's ridiculous. Now we're talking by 2026, 8.5% renewables. My God, let the free hand of the market show up and work. These plants cannot compete, and they should go the way of dinosaurs. Shut them down. And what do they produce? They produce nuclear waste. Nuclear power is nuclear waste. Nobody knows what to do with it. So stop it, and let's get out of this quagmire.
And, of course, these nobody knows. You know what's amazing? One of the amazing things, first of all, I grew up in this town in Columbus, and all you ever heard from the Republicans was free market, free market, free market. And then all of a sudden, when they lose the money on something, it's bailout, bailout, bailout. It's outrageous. And these guys like Trump have no shame whatsoever. And they're running around the state saying, you know, putting these ads on TV, which I'm sure Becca has seen, about how it's all about jobs at the nuclear plant, but these reactors are going to destroy the economic structure of Ohio by making us completely above market energy here. Kevin Camps of the Beyond Nuclear Organization, you want to jump in on that?
Yeah, well, you know, huge thanks to Becca and to Neil Wagner at Sierra Club Beyond Coal, because their alerts and their updates have kept me informed, which has enabled me to keep our members and supporters in Ohio informed and activated. And like Becca said, it's been a moving target the entire time. This is such an absurdity. I mean, I know legislation is sausage making, but this has taken it to a whole nother level. And one thing I was going to say about the missing, the AWOL legislators, thank goodness that we have two more weeks to fight this thing, maybe we can stop it, is remember that First Energy said that they would have to shut Davis-Besse for a certainty if they didn't get their bailout by June 30th. And Tim Judson at NEARS called their bluff months ago during all the various rounds of public comment. He said, you know, this claim that they have to order fuel that far in advance, a year ahead of time, it's just a bluff. It's the same bluff that Exelon pulled up in New York State to get their bailout. The deadline comes and goes, and they're still fine. And sure enough, June 30th came and went, and First Energy said, oh, we can wait a bit longer. And so the point I was going to make is probably those three missing House members thought that they were on summer vacation, right? Because it was supposed to be summer vacation right now, only First Energy told the state Senate to get the work done. They did. But maybe they forgot to tell the state house that they were still on the clock. So, but the figure, the last I knew, but like we've said, it's a moving target, was $150 million per year. So if you split it down the middle, it'd be $75 million for Davis-Besse, $75 million for Perry. That would go on for 6 years. That's the better part of $1 billion of Ohioans' hard-earned money going to this mismanaged company. And, you know, one of the devilish details that's come out, thanks to good guy experts testifying before the legislature, is that First Energy is making money at these nukes despite their protestations to the contrary. The figure of $50 million, I believe, in profits in the past year during their bankruptcy. And the thought that came to my mind today about the bankruptcy is First Energy is claiming they have to seal their books during this bankruptcy. They can't reveal anything. To my mind, that's upside down. If you're claiming bankruptcy and you're trying to evade paying back your debts, you have to open your books, you know? So it's absurdity, but the stakes are so very high. And another last point I'll make is, you know, the safety risks is something I try to keep bringing up. I know Davis-Besse way better than I know Perry, but Davis-Besse is just a catastrophe waiting to happen. And when you look at the NRC's own report from 1982, what could happen in terms of casualties? What could happen in terms of property value damages and property damages if something goes wrong at a reactor like Davis-Besse? And it, you know, is way worse than September 11th, I'll say that. So that is a risk that is being taken by propping up Davis-Besse and Perry for another how many more years of very high-risk operations. And that part of the equation often gets left out of the legislative debate, but it is a very big elephant in the room.
Well, these guys are just sick. I mean, you know, I there's no other way. And I got to say, you know, in terms of the chutzpah, they have come into the Ohio legislature with this $150 million per year, dollar per year figure. And Becca, correct me if I'm wrong, there's no documentation for that. I mean, I think they just pulled that number out of the air. Doesn't come from anywhere. Is that right, Becca? Then have you seen any documentation that indicates why the number is $150 million a year?
No, I haven't. I mean, I'm not necessarily the expert on that aspect of this, but yeah, I'm not aware of an explanation for that particular number.
Michael, can you tell us? Where was this, like a rat cage that they threw a bunch of numbers in and spun it around and came up with $150 million?
Sure, why not? They also refused to release to the they asked that the NRC keep finances quiet, because to reveal any finances of First Energy would be to hamstring them in a competitive market. So the cook in the book during bankruptcy, the cook in the books of the NRC, the cook in the book with the legislators, how many sets of books are there? But the Ohio is being sold a pig in a poke. There are major problems with these two nuclear reactors. And the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which is a captured regulator, which does not regulate, which promotes, has granted a multitude of exemptions to First Energy, allowing them to operate outside of flood compliance, seismic compliance, fire compliance, security compliance. They've given them exemptions to run the plant with through-the-wall leaks and pipe 2 and 3 classification. Just the list of exemptions goes on and on. The evacuation plans are being gutted. The personnel are being gutted. It's not coming back. They are running these plants into the ground. The NRC is aiding and abetting criminal negligence at these nuclear reactors. And sadly, the Ohio legislators, they're all in the pocket. They are taking PAC monies left and right, and this is not acceptable. These reactors are going to be a millstone around their neck come the next election.
Well, let's hope so. Kevin Camps, you and Michael Keegan probably know more about David Quincy than anybody else on earth. I mean, where does this $150 million number come from? You got any idea? I mean, do they go to Vegas, or what's the deal?
Well, I think they're just trying to get away with as much as they can, and they have had to ratchet it down some, which is interesting. Like Becca was saying, this is a highly unpopular bill, and the cast of characters opposing it is quite diverse. I mean, you've got from us tree huggers to the Koch brothers and everything in between, essentially. Many other industries that are not getting such benefits, like the renewable energy industry, the efficiency industry, the natural gas industry. So they're just trying to get away with as much as they can. And like Keegan said, there's various books, there's various versions, they're all secretive. And the one safety, like Keegan said, the pig in the poke, how much would it cost to replace the Davis-Besse shield building, the final line of defense in containment, because it is severely cracked. So if they're going to keep running this thing till the 2037 license expiration with, you know, subsidy support from the people of Ohio, what about replacing the shield building? I mean, the answer to that is several billion dollars. It's a non-starter. The shield building is so badly cracked that it could collapse, or at least parts of it could, and that collapse could take out safety systems down below. And in that sense, the collapse of the shield building could cause the meltdown that it then cannot contain. That is the level of risk-taking at Davis-Besse right now.
This makes Alice in Wonderland look like a New York Times report. I mean, it's astounding. And, of course, that stuff doesn't come up in the hearings. The legislators don't want to hear any of this stuff. I do want to point out, before we lose track of these numbers, that the top seven people, the top seven executives at First Energy are paid by First Energy upwards of $25 million a year, the seven. Chuck Jones, who's at the top of the feeding frenzy here, is paid $9.5 million a year. So if they give $150 million to Perry and Davis-Besse, First Energy, to do whatever they're going to do, $9.5 million of that goes straight into the pocket of the clown who put First Energy into bankruptcy. Now, we all know, of course, that the reason they're in bankruptcy has nothing to do with actual business. What they want to do in bankruptcy, and Michael, maybe you know some of the detail here, is divide up the company, and then they picked one unit, and they put all the stuff that needs to be cleaned up and decommissioned into that unit, and then they bankrupted that one so that they can shed those responsibilities. I mean, it's a fake bankruptcy, actually. Did I get that right, Michael?
Well, a lot of moving parts, and I would argue that it is fraudulent conveyance in the bankruptcy court. In fact, I think the bankruptcy court a couple months sent them back saying, nah, we're not going to accept this. But it boils down to extortion. They're saying, oh, unless we're holding a gun to your head, unless you bail us out, you're going to lose all this tax revenue, you're going to lose these jobs, you're going to lose this school base. Bail out the communities, bail out the tax base, bail out the schools, set up a fund for worker retraining as they did with automotive. But these guys are not special, and they are using these people. They're using the communities to line their pockets. And as I say, at the end of the day, this is all just being teed up to go into Exelon's pocket. That's who's moving in after this is through. So this is about shareholders basically raping the state of Ohio. So I've got a problem with it. And as I say, I share the lake with them, and their bankruptcy and their terrible operation of these facilities is impacting my lake that I have to drink out of. And now we're looking at water advisories on the algal blooms, and they are a major contributor to that through the thermal pollution. So now they got to go, and they got to go. They should have gone a decade ago.
Well, they should never have been built in the first place. But that's another story. And, you know, slight detail, Davis Bessie was designed in the 1960s. Perry was designed in the 1970s. Perry is the first nuclear plant in the United States to be damaged by an earthquake, for God's sakes. And, it just goes on and on. It's staggering how blatant this is. I will say, but I've been surprised, by the way, much of the, and Becca, maybe you can comment on this, many of the newspapers in the state have actually come out against this, which is really rare. The Plain Dealer, Toledo Blade not only printed my letter, but they gave it a big headline. How have you been doing with the media in the state of Ohio, Becca?
We've been really pleased with the coverage of this bill and, just the number of letters to the editor and op-eds opposing this and editorials. A lot of papers have actually come out against it and have had some really strong headlines. We've been really pleased to see that. I mean, this is a very unpopular bill, and the media gets that.
Well, talk about strange bedfellows. I mean, the Ohio Manufacturers Association has come out against this, and, of course, the oil and gas guys are against it. I guess whoever owns those two coal plants in down south there like it. Or I guess one's in the north, one's in the south. But, and I got to say that the world's record for strange bedfellows has been set by this fight. J. Kenneth Blackwell, the Secretary of State of Ohio in 2004, who engineered the on-the-ground work for the theft of the 2004 election, for the Bush-Cheney Rove team. J. Kenneth Blackwell has written an op-ed against the bailout. I guess he got hired by the oil and gas people. And also, of course, you've got opposition from the Grover Norquist and the Taxpayers Association who don't like it. And I guess the Koch brothers don't like it. But I don't see why, if the Koch brothers are against it, they're even close to winning it. Becca, do you know, or Kevin or Michael, the mechanism by which they've engineered the legislature to support this?
Well, I just this is Kevin. I've heard that Householder, who's the Speaker of the House, is close to First Energy, so they've got some friends in high places who they've helped get there with their campaign contributions, and then they've sicked their lobbyists on the State House. And the thing is, this fight against a bailout of Ohio's nukes, it's not just a recent phenomenon. This has really been going on for over 5 years. And so it's not a minor miracle. It's a major miracle that we've held it off this long, but it's more intense now than it's ever been. So, you know, we can win. Our colleagues in Pennsylvania prevailed at Three Mile Island Unit 1. It looks like it is going to shut down by September 30th because Exelon did not get the bailout it wanted at Three Mile Island, and so they're going to shut it down. And there are many other reactors in Ohio, in Pennsylvania, that we have to fight the same fight all over again, but we can win this thing, and we've got 2 weeks. So I really encourage Ohio listeners to contact your state House member, your state senator, and if you don't live in Ohio but you know people that do, please let them know that now is the time to get to know their legislators and let them know what you think about this.
Yeah, and I would
it's really
that,
yes,
know,
Becca, go
even
ahead.
If, you know, call people, even if they're not your state rep, call the other state reps and just keep the pressure on all of them, because this is going to impact every Ohioan. So, you know, there are 10 House Dems who did vote in favor of HB 6 when the earlier version passed the House. So it's especially important that we target them and let them know that, you know, Ohioans are paying attention to this, that we will not stand for this, and that there will be consequences if they support the new version of this bill.
Mine. Well, how many, do we have any indication if any of those Democrats have changed their mind?
We don't know for sure. There are some who, you know, we think may be swayable, but it's hard to say at this point. So, you know, I would really just encourage everyone to make phone calls, send emails, send handwritten letters, and to tweet at them. And I can read off a list of those names to you right now. It's Richard Brown, Jack Serra, Tavia Galonsky, Catherine Ingram, Joe Miller, John Patterson, John Rogers, Lisa Sebecki, Terrence Upchurch, and Thomas West. Those are the 10 who voted for it before. So, you know, we need to let them know that they're not going to get away with voting for it again and getting reelected.
Wow. You know, it's mind-boggling. I do want to move on a bit to the national scene. In the New York Times today, just looking at it, is a piece. Not only has the Trump EPA approved a pesticide that kills bees and another chemical that kills human children, small detail, they also have a piece here about the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, basically wants to stop inspecting atomic reactors, as if they've been inspecting them at all anyway. But Michael Keegan, and then Kevin, do you guys want to talk about this latest insanity from the NRC? I mean, why don't they just shut the place down? I mean, what's the point?
Well, a recent incident at Fermi, there's debris in the nuclear reactor torus, in the wet well beneath the reactor. That is coming off. It's like a coating, and it's clogging the pumps. And this was supposed to be remedied in 1996, and yet it's gone on. We're here 23 years later. They're dealing with it and trying to suppress it. They don't want to do the actual inspection, open up the torus, take a look at it. They want to do a paper audit. So the NRC does not walk these plants down. Nuclear engineer Dave Lockbaum tells me that a nuclear plant, only about 5% of a nuclear plant is inspected per year. So it's basically 20 years before a full inspection occurs of a nuclear power plant. So this is not acceptable at all, and there are problems, and the regulator's been captured. And what the regulator does is they obstruct the public from getting involved and actually getting to the core of any issues. They interfere and they subvert. But I wanted to say, when economists take a look at a situation, they look at opportunity cost. The greatest cost of all is the opportunity cost. If they bail out these two nuclear power plants, what do they lack Ohio into for the decades to come. Those are going to be the cost, the loss cost, the opportunity cost. And, of course, the degradation of the environment. I mean, Arne Gunderson, nuclear engineer, says you can run a plant for 40 years, one bad day, and you've wiped out every potential gain. And there really is no gain. These are not energy producers. These are redistributions of wealth from the ratepayers on up to the shareholders. And this is nothing more than a corporate bailout.
And then in Ohio, there's this dimension which is, you know, is just so far over the top, which is that Ohio has a law in the Ohio code basically banning wind power. It's the only, I think there's one other setback clause like it somewhere in the United States. But it basically is a single sentence in the Ohio code whose sole purpose, which has been successful, is to prevent the building of wind farms in Ohio. And there is so much wind in northern Ohio with transmission lines on flat land close to the cities that the entire state could be supplied with wind power in the North Coast. And a single sentence in the Ohio Code has prevented this I think since 2014 or 15. Do you know offhand, Becca?
I believe it was 2014.
And, you know, it's outrageous. Absolutely outrageous, because wind is so cheap and usable and getting more so and creating more jobs in Ohio. And while they're bailing out these reactors, they're preventing the wind power that could come in and replace all those jobs, replace all that energy. And here these free market Republicans are talking about $150 million a year bailout with zero documentation to tell us where they got the numbers. We're almost out of time. I want to, Becca, real quickly, how do people get a hold of you?
You can email me at becca.pollard@sierraclub.org.
Okay. And you are
also
right there
on
the belly of the
Twitter
beast.
And
I've written Neil, by the way, and I want to try and get a meeting together sometime next week. You know, we
that
all communicate
great.
Electronically and by phone. But put people in a room, and you always come up with something you didn't think about. So if you'll get your head together with Neil Wagner at the Sierra Club and convene a meeting next week, I think we should really get together and figure out how to win this. Michael Keegan, how do people get a hold of you?
Send me an email at mkeeganj@comcast.net. But I'll be
all
out
right
there and digging in the dockets and sending documents around.
Yeah, you're a master of the documents. I don't know how you do it, but you manage to look at these NRC documents and tell us what's going on. Kevin Camps, how do people get a hold of you?
Yeah, I'm kevin@beyondnuclear.org, and if folks want to learn more detail on all of this about the bailout in Ohio for the nukes and the coal, I've tried to post everything I can get my hands on at beyondnuclear.org, and just look on the left-hand side for the nuclear costs section. That's our nuclear subsidies and bailout section, and the Ohio situation is dominating that section of our website for the past many months.
And I want to point out that while all this craziness is going on in Ohio, which people tend to make fun of, we can't get the governor of California to even inspect the Diablo Canyon nuclear plants, which are surrounded by earthquake faults, and where they just experienced, less than 200 miles away, a 7.1 Richter scale quake that could have ripped Diablo Canyon apart and sent a radioactive cloud into Los Angeles, where there are almost as many people in L.A. County as there are in Ohio, 10 million, and we can't get this great liberal governor to go in there and even inspect this embrittled, cracked, seismically vulnerable reactors. Before we go, real quick, Kevin, you and I were talking about the Chernobyl series on HBO, and I have to say that I have never lost sleep over anything I've seen on TV, well, except for Trump. And, you know, this Chernobyl series, devastating. You saw it. Tell us what you think.
Yeah, it's a great filmmaking. It's based on true stories, and there's a podcast that accompanies each of the five episodes, and the filmmaker gives more background. You know, he really stands on the back of giants like Svetlana Alexievich, who won the Nobel Prize in Literature for works like Voices from Chernobyl. And some of the characters that he depicts who are not fiction, they are nonfiction. They are real people. Those people in this portrayal are chapters in Alexievich's book, some of the most heartbreaking stories of what people went through, many of whom did not make it through the Chernobyl catastrophe. And while we're talking Chernobyl, I just wanted to mention, I was in Kiev, Ukraine for the 20th anniversary of Chernobyl, listening to a Chernobyl whistleblower, listening to him through translation on headphones, and I heard him say Davis Bessie before it was translated. And what he was saying was, I've told you all about the RBMK reactor of the Soviets. Let me tell you, it's not the only problem. There's American reactors like Davis Bessie.
Well, listen, Kevin, Michael, Becca, thank you so much. We'll put this up on the internet. Let's hope. Let's win this one in Ohio. Thank you so much. Back to you next week in Solartopia.
Solartopia. Solartopia. Solartopia.